I'm Alan Lytle for 91.3 WUKY. It is the second of our series of conversations with Lexington author Fiona Young Brown. This is Lexington Stories, Lore, and More. Welcome, Fiona.
Good to be back.
Last month, we had discussed, because it was so close to Halloween, all of the spooky stories around Lexington. And today, I thought that another aspect of Lexington that people just sort of drive around and don't think about too much is all of the architecture around the second largest city in the state. And we're talking about Lexington architectural gems and then maybe some of the oddities that dot our fine town.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Everyone looks for that good old southern classical architecture and the horse farms and things, and then you're driving along and you see something that doesn't quite fit. Did I just see a giant cocktail or a Dixie cup or a UFO?
there's one. Okay, we'll start near Leestown Road, the Coca-Cola bottling plant there. It is mid-century modern architecture, you know, writ large, I would say.
Yeah, it definitely came out of that. I mean, there's no mistaking when you see it, you know exactly what era it was built. It's very much from a specific point in time. And you do kind of do that double take because, I mean, when you get close up, you're not going to mistake it for a UFO or anything. But as you're driving past, you see it, and it's got that certain kind of space age quality about it, that top floor, and it makes you slow down and then want to drive around and see it from other angles.
And I'm guessing that's exactly what you did when you were doing research for this book, as I'm holding it up to the microphone, Secret Lexington, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, which is available in wherever you buy your books. And what was that experience like? You go to the Coca-Cola plant, well, you just knock on the door, or is it a few emails traded back and forth?
Actually, I never got any response from anyone. So if anyone works there and is listening to this, then, you know, reply to your emails, because I was fascinated. I'd love to have been able to see inside, although it may have been very disappointing and corporate and so on. So I tried to email because I was really trying to find exactly when it was built and who by, you know, what the inspiration was. And could never get any definitive answers. I mean, obviously 1960s, space age, I think it's pretty safe to say. But it would have been fun if I had heard from someone there who could say, yeah, you know, we really wanted to go for this, or this was really important to us and why. But regardless, I mean, everyone knows of it as the Coca-Cola UFO, or some kind of variation of that. I drove over to it, and I kind of think the best views are from Leestown Road. You can drive around and go into their parking lot and see it a lot closer up, but I tend to think that the best views are from out on Leestown near the Veterans Hospital, although obviously watch out for traffic along there, trying to get photos from that angle.
And trying to find their way, and trying to find their way to New Circle Road, because as we are recording this, there is no way to get onto New Circle Road by way of Leestown.
That is true. I've heard that it's currently completely closed off, which would explain all of the fun traffic all around other parts of town as people try to figure out how to get somewhere.
Okay, so moving on, the Dixie Cup Tower. What can you tell me about that that tower that is actually a Dixie Cup?
Well, I should mention the other UFO in town.
Oh, yeah,
first.
Okay, yes, okay.
Let's not forget our other UFO. Lexington has two, and that's the house round on Mount Tabor Road.
Oh, yes, like octagonal, correct?
It's a very odd octagonal house, and again, people know it as the UFO house. And I bring it up because apparently it wasn't built until 1986. 1986? That sounds wrong. It feels as if it should have been much earlier.
I think more like 70s.
That's what 60s I would have thought. 70s. But apparently, but what I loved about that one recently is it recently went on the market.
And how does that happen?
Apparently, and I haven't driven by it for a while, you know, not to see up close. You kind of just see it as you drive going past. But apparently it kind of needs a little bit of work at the moment. But in September of this year, a realtor, I guess somehow a realty company came into possession of it, and he decided that within 24 hours of buying it and signing the contract, the realtor decided, you know what, let's just flip this. It apparently sold in less than a minute.
And the buyer, we don't know.
The buyer is another development company. They have said they're going to restore the house to its, you know, keep it with what makes it so popular in the neighborhood and so kind of quirky. They are going to make it two apartments. I think there's a two-bedroom apartment on one floor and a one-bedroom on the other. But they've said they'll restore it. They'll keep it with that UFO look. But they want to make it kind of affordable apartments for people, for a couple of people in Lexington. But yeah, it sold in less than a minute and made the local news because there was just this sudden rush. He said the minute he announced he was even thinking of selling it, the phone started ringing and the first caller said, I'll take it.
Wow. And so, the opportunity to, you know, to own a landmark like that, architectural.
Exactly.
Oddity.
I wonder what it's like inside, you know. It would be kind of fun to decorate it in a interior style that matches it, you know, kind of space age or something. But
luminous curtains, perhaps.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm picturing very 60s kind of, I don't know how livable that would be, but I'm picturing all those sort of very 60s stylized movies that you used to see with odd, I don't know, I'm picturing James Coburn and Flint or something.
Yes, our man Flint, a classic movie from the mid-60s. Cashing in, of course, on the James Bond craze.
Definitely, yep.
Yeah. So that is UFO number two.
That's the
in
UFO,
our fine town. So if you're scoring at home, the Coca-Cola plant on Leestown and then the octagonal house off of Mount Tabor Road.
See, I feel by the time we finish this episode, someone will have a good afternoon of driving around town just to see all of these. So
my vision and my hope is that people will download this podcast and actually go to these sites and listen to us yammer on about them.
Perfect.
Sound like a good
although,
deal?
Although, does that mean we should just kind of ramble on as they deal with the traffic on Leestown Road?
Possibly. I mean,
or just tell them pause and replay.
I could tell them some very, very boring old radio stories.
There we go.
In between okay. There. So. All right. So let me get to the Dixie Cup.
That is, I mean, let's.
You have a picture of it in the book.
I do. There's no mistaking it. It's a giant
tower.
Water tower that looks like a Dixie cup and has the word Dixie around it and the rim of a paper cup. I mean.
And where is this?
It is over on, let me see, Harbison Road, which actually is not that far from the Coca-Cola plant. It's in that kind of industrial area. And it's actually pretty easy to find down there. Well, I mean, it's so tall, you can't miss it. And there's a lot of little business parking areas and so on down there where you can really stop and get a good close-up look, even if you can't go, you can't technically go into the Georgia Pacific plant. And so there are a lot of places around where you can get a great view of it. And like I said, there's really no missing it. I don't know how true it is, but and I found this story repeated again and again in newspapers that there was some talk of demolishing it years ago when they closed that actual plant, but that local pilots said this is something that we use as kind of a guide when we come into Bluegrass Airport. It's one, you know, I guess they have those visual markers that you see, and a lot of pilots apparently said we use this, and so that was good enough for everyone to say it stays.
And what is the property now then? The plant has closed.
The plant, there is still, I think there's a tiny little, I mean, there's a bit of an office there. But it really, the company was bought, the original Dixie Cup company was bought by Georgia Pacific. They have kept the tower, and there is still something over there. It's locked off. There are security guards preventing you from going there and so on. Meanwhile, they've opened another plant in Bowling Green, which apparently is now the big one. 25% of their paper cups and bowls come from Bowling Green.
Well, at least they keep it in Kentucky.
So it is still in Kentucky, yep.
Yeah, and but people can drive around, as you mentioned, in their cars and kind of get close to it and maybe even take a picture or two.
Yeah, there are a lot of good spots around there, particularly on the transport court area. There are a couple of parking lots, and it's pretty quiet around there, and you get a really good clear view without anything else in the way. And I actually ended up delving into the history of the Dixie Cup, which I had no idea was such a big thing when it came out.
It was revolutionary.
So you are seeing a part of revolutionary culinary creative history when you look at that.
When was the Dixie Cup invented?
1907 was when they started to think about different ways to create something that was sort of safer. Because that was there was a big push into public health and germs. How do we stop germ spreading? And so that was when people had the idea of, you know what, if we made all these little disposable cups, then people wouldn't be drinking from the same cup, spreading germs and so on. And so the original one was called a health cup.
Makes sense.
And then in 1906 was the official Dixie Cup. And that was the one, after that, all of the others kind of just faded away.
And the headquarters then, how does it come to Lexington, Kentucky?
They actually moved here in 1958. The company was based in New York and kind of grew and grew. Once the Dixie Cup was invented over the 1940s and 50s, I think the 50s especially, was really a big time for all of this kind of disposable. Now we maybe cringe at the word disposable. At the time, it was seen, like I said, as a kind of a safer option because, you didn't have to worry about passing anything on. And so by 1958, they'd become so popular that was when they opened the plant in Lexington and then decorated the local water tower as well that was on the plant.
So it's an iconic tower. It kind of leads me to the next one that is still on New Circle Road. The business itself is no longer there, but the Parkette Drive-In neon sign.
Oh.
We got to talk about that.
That sign is so beautiful. And it's funny, I used to live just around the corner from there, which on the one hand was great because the Parkette was so close. On the other hand, that's kind of dangerous, I'm sure. I'm sure a cardiologist would argue it's not a good place to eat all the time. But yeah, it's still a landmark. It's a shame. Obviously now the Parkette is gone. For a few years, I think everyone kept hoping, that it would come back, that someone would revive it, take it over and so on. But now the whole building's gone and all that's left is that sign, which is still it's one of those markers when you're driving around New Circle. And it's funny, I've chatted to so many people, especially since the Parkette is on the cover of Secret Lexington, a lot of people are quick to point it out. And there seems to be a real divide between people. There's kind of a universal missing of the Parkette and mourning, wishing it was back. And half of the people I've spoken to have said, just get rid of the sign. I don't want the reminder. Take it down. It's no longer there. It's not, I see the sign and have this little bit of hope. And then the other half are adamant it needs to stay. It's such a big part of Lexington's history.
It's interesting, too, because that's all that's left. Mm-hmm. Somebody else owns the lot, but they've left the sign up.
Yeah, I always wonder when that happens. I've seen that in other places as well. You know, they'll demolish the entire building but keep the sign. And I have to wonder, is it just that that's too much hassle to demolish? Or is it that you want that kind of reminder of what was there?
Speaking of reminders, we got to get to the old Bondurant Pharmacy, which is now a liquor store. That's in the Versailles Road corridor.
Yep. And we both admitted that that is one of our favorite little quirky landmarks around town.
Yeah. What do we know about that building?
That was originally a mortar and pestle. This is creative redesigning architecture. And I remember when I think I first saw it not long after I moved to Lexington, and at the time looked at it, and, you know, you're driving along Versailles Road and think, huh, that looks like a, oh, no, that would be really silly. And then you think, oh, it is a cocktail. and then you realize, no, it used to be something else. And I just think that's some good creativity. So, it used to be Bondurant's. I hope I'm saying that correctly. And he was a local pharmacist. And apparently back in the early 70s, he was getting ready to open his pharmacy. And he went on vacation to Vegas. And so
this is
little bit of good Vegas inspiration here in Lexington. And, you know, we've already seen the UFO buildings where there was that kind of want to mimic other things with whatever you were building. And so there was this whole thing, apparently it's called mimetic architecture.
I knew you would know that. I kind of figured, you know, buildings that symbolize something else.
So, I can't tell you much about, you know, classic architecture other than it's nice, it has towers, but yeah, mimetic architecture.
And you did all the research because you wrote this book, so yeah.
And so that's when you get these buildings that are designed to look like something specific, usually something related to what was inside them. And so there was always that big one, was it the Longaberger Basket Company up in Ohio. With the huge, huge office building that was designed to look like a basket. So he went to Vegas. He saw all of the Vegas-style architecture. I'd like to think that maybe he had high hopes that he was going to inspire the whole of Versailles Road to turn into a mini Vegas strip or something. But whatever the case, he came back and had Bondurant's design to look like a traditional mortar and pestle for making pharmaceuticals, for making over-the-counter medicines and so on. And so that's why it's such a beautifully odd shape, but I love it.
And then I assume the business gets sold and then it finds new life.
Yep. So he opened it in 1974. And to give anyone who hasn't seen it a description, it's a giant round building. It's apparently 32 feet by 30 feet tall, because I know you were wondering about the dimensions. But at the top, there's I don't think it has any practical purpose, but there's a pestle sticking out for another 10 feet. Yes, so that opened in 1974, and then he retired in 2013 or 2003.
In the early 2000s.
In the early 2000s, I am spotting
in the new century.
I'm spotting a typo in my book, and I'm now having. He retired and sold on the business to another pharmacist, actually, and they kept the pharmacy going until 2011. So I think it was 2003 that he retired, sold it on to another pharmacist. They kept it going, but then they decided to just close up shop in 2011, and so that was when there was this kind of, you know. It's not a practical building for most things.
Right.
What are you going to do with it? Who do you demolish it? What are you going to turn it into?
And there's probably mixed feelings about demolishing something like that.
Exactly.
Because it's a one of in this town.
Exactly. It's so quirky. You kind of have this argument where it's not even at some point about how traditionally beautiful it is and so on. It's quirky. It's one of a kind. If you demolish it, then in 20 years' time, there's going to be a whole lot of people looking back and saying, wow, that was a really cool building. What happened to it?
And why did they tear it down?
Exactly. And you see, I mean, think about how often you do find yourself saying that about buildings. So luckily for Lexington and for all us passers-by, someone had a bright idea because they were looking at it and thinking, you know, it doesn't just have to be a mortar and pestle. That can be a cocktail. And so they have, it's now a liquor store. I've never actually been inside it. I know it has a drive-through, but I've never actually driven through. I just look at the building. But yep, it now has been painted to represent a cocktail glass. I know we were discussing before what kind of cocktail specifically, but either way, the top is now a cherry on top of the cocktail. So it fits. It was the perfect redesign of that building. It's eye-catching. I love going past it. It's colorful, and it actually looks beautiful. And, you know, I've been along to photograph it several times, and it is just so eye-catching, whether it's with a perfect blue sky behind it or that kind of pinkish tinge,
which
sunset,
you have in the,
and so
in the
on.
Book. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is striking. That's a striking image, and one that people, you know, if you're new to Lexington, you want to check that out for sure.
Definitely. And now there's usually a food truck in front of it, which, again, I haven't tried, but I have heard.
We enjoy it quite a bit, quite often.
So.
Yeah, it's unbelievable food. and you know, they just, it's a la the Parquette, you pull up and then they come to your window and take your order.
Okay.
So it's pretty cool. Yeah. Speaking of one-offs, there's also, when you're driving out Versailles Road,
mm-hmm.
a castle. What do we know about the castle?
And I should put it, technically I know the castle is not in Lexington or Fayette County.
But cars do go out that way.
I mean, if you come to Lexington, you know about the castle. If you fly into Lexington, you see the castle. So I think you can't really talk about Lexington architecture without discussing it. And I actually, I remember years ago, I was visiting one of the historic houses in Lexington, which I won't name in case they're listening and horrified. But I remember mentioning the castle. It was just after the fire. And so, you know, it was that thing. And they were just horrified by the design. They launched into a whole rant of explaining to me how this was not in any way a historically accurate castle, that, you know, the turrets and the spot, none of it matched. Some of it was Gothic. Some of it was from this, you know. And so they were just horrified that...
Obviously a
this.
Purist.
Exactly. A true architectural purist when it comes to castles. But let's face it, it's a great building.
Looks great from the road, too. That's for sure. You know.
And it's great that they finally finished it as
yes.
well. I mean,
yes.
that was quite a journey to get that to actually finished. And I know, I'm sure most people in Lexington wondered if it ever would be, or again, if it would just be one of those things that ended up being demolished or falling apart. So,
and this backstory of how it got built is very a lot of ups and downs, a lot of twists and turns.
Exactly. I mean, it looks so. It's, I mean, and now it's a hotel, so it looks very kind of romantic. It's this fairy tale castle, and there's kind of this fairy tale story behind it, which was back in 1969, a man by the name of Rex Martin started building it for his wife. Hint to all the husbands out there who just don't know what to get their wife for Valentine's Day.
Somehow the white picket fence wasn't enough.
It
I
wasn't
don't think,
enough, no.
To seal the deal.
She had been, they'd gone to Europe on honeymoon. She had seen all of these magnificent castles. And he decided that he wanted to give her something that magical, which is very romantic.
It's noble.
It's very noble. It's also very ambitious.
True.
I mean, you could take someone away for a very nice cruise every year to the castles of Europe, or you could build one. So that was in 1969. He decided to build one. Obviously, building a castle is not exactly a quick endeavor, you know, by the time you've got plans, land, and then the actual building. And so in 1975...
6 years later.
They divorced.
Oh.
The love story did not, maybe this is, do not try to build your wives a castle.
Crumbled because, like the castle walls.
Oh, so beautifully tragic. And that kind of, you know, put a halt to everything. There was very little point in finishing it, and I'm sure he didn't want to be reminded of it. If I remember correctly, he moved away down to Florida, I think. And so it was empty and half finished for about 30 years. When I first came to Kentucky for the first time in the late 90s, I remember driving along that way and you just see parts of you. Oh, that kind of looks like it should be a castle. And then, you know, someone would tell you the whole story about what happened and would it ever get finished. But again, it's one of those landmarks as you're driving back into town that tells you where you are. That's what I love about a lot of these buildings. You know them. They're your landmarks. They're kind of your guiding points for how close you are to home or whatever.
Yes, and they're markers of what makes Lexington, Lexington.
Exactly. So it was closed for years, but I think every time I've driven past there's always at least one car that's pulled up to take a picture because people can't quite believe it. And then I remember, was it 2004. So Rex Martin moved away, left it just kind of abandoned, didn't want to deal with it. He died, but apparently would never sell it.
Maybe he just wanted to hold on to the idea of one day, you know, picking it up and
I think
it.
That could be it. He could never quite bring himself to part with it. But then after he died in 2003, it was bought by an attorney who had always seen it and kind of felt that it should be finished. And then the following year, there was the big fire. Mm. Was it apparently lightning struck one of the towers? And that spread, I remember seeing it on the news and people, the smoke across
the town. A great
conflagration,
yes.
Massive. That pretty much wrecked it.
You would think that that would have been the end of it, but then this building found new life again.
Exactly. You would think, and this is on some prime land near Keeneland, horse farms, development and so on. So, yeah, you would, I think anyone else might well have been tempted to say, okay, that was good. It was a fun idea, but now let's move on. And, you know, it would be a subdivision or something. And
here come the bulldozers.
Exactly.
Just, you know, yeah.
And so I'm incredibly glad that they didn't decide to do that. They decided to rebuild the entire thing from scratch as it was originally and then complete it. And so it finally opened in 2007. So they actually, once they decided to rebuild, they really got their skates on and it was done within a few years. It's been a hotel, a bed and breakfast. It's a restaurant, a wedding venue. You can go for, I've been to murder mystery evenings there. It's an interesting place.
And one that people continue to talk about to this day.
Yes. Apparently Architectural Digest magazine, which is not one that I'm a regular reader of because they don't have enough UFOs and cocktail buildings and so on. But apparently they named it the most beautiful hotel in the state of Kentucky and one of the most beautiful castles in the world that you can actually sleep in.
Take that, purist.
Yeah. We've got one of the best castles in the world.
Wow. So, yeah, they you talk about kind of landing on your feet and you know, thriving business right now.
Yeah, and I think it really was just pure, obviously not good luck that it burned down and so on, but just, it says something to the various owners that it's had since then about their dedication to keep this Lexington story going and really build on it and make it the true landmark that it always wanted to be, I suppose.
Other landmarks that you talk about in your book and show pictures of, what have we not talked about?
I think one that I really, I'll be honest, I hated this the first time I saw it. And then it's one of those things that once I started to look into it, and that's the Miller House.
Ah, really mid-century modern.
It's very.
Yeah.
And I remember years ago it was.
First of all, where is the Miller House?
Okay, the Miller House is, I have to use my GPS to even try and find it. It's over, I'm trying to even, Lochmere Place, which is sort of down off, is it Childsburg Road? I'm very unfamiliar with that area. I remember you go down Richmond Road, keep going, but turn off before you hit the interstate and drive around there. And there's now a subdivision of very big houses around there. I have to plug it in every time. As I said, it's not a neighborhood that I'm overly familiar with.
But you could put it in your maps,
you can navigator, put it into your maps,
just the name, Miller.
It will take you right there. Miller House may show it up for you.
Okay.
Or if not, it's over on, like I said, Lochmere Place.
Okay.
And I remember going to look around it maybe in the 2010s, sometime around there. I think there may have been an open afternoon or it was on the market. And so it was one of those things, because it was so unusual, people were going out to look at it. And I remember going around and thinking, why would anyone want to live here? By it actually reminded me of an elementary school, in that very kind of clean design, hallways dividing and connecting one part of the building to another, very kind of minimalist style. I just felt as if I were back in elementary school.
So it left you cold. It's more utilitarian.
Exactly.
Not the least bit luxurious at all.
It didn't feel like something, you know, where I'd put down carpets and cozy couches and things. And so I never really paid much attention to it. And then when I was doing the book, I thought, yeah, I should probably look into this. I mean, how did it come up? And I discovered that it was actually built by a world-famous architect. And it's one. It really is one of those cases where kind of once you learn about it, I think you come to appreciate it more. I still don't think I'd want to live there, but I now appreciate the style and the design of it more. So it's called the Miller House, but it was designed by, again, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Jose Ubreri, and he was a French-born architect. But luckily for Lexington, came to live here. He trained in France, and he trained apparently under the leading modernist architect, kind of the founder of this whole movement. And then in the 80s, he came to the U.S. He taught at UK. He was dean of the School of Design. He moved up to Ohio State and taught up there for a while. And then when he retired in 2013, he moved back to Lexington because we are a charming place. And apparently a big part of their modernist design that they were trying to make was called the domino.
And you can see that in your mind.
Yeah, that was the idea. And it's kind of, I mean, it makes sense once you know about it. Their plan was that they wanted to create housing that was affordable, that was kind of modular, that you could easily fit together, piece together based on your needs. So in this case, it's actually three separate modules. They wanted something, the people that he designed it for wanted somewhere that they could live with their children, and then as their children got older, their families could live in basically the same, different modules, so have their own space, their own self-contained living area, but it's all contained into one. And so that was kind of their idea, that this would revolutionize housing, that you'd get these modules, fit them together. It would be easier for construction. They were made out of concrete and steel. I mean, and so when you hear that, it makes actually perfect sense. It's kind of, it's practical, easy to make and so on. And so the house, as I said, you've got three living spaces, and then you've got these kind of hallways, corridors and that combine it, which I think is what to me, when I looked around it, reminded me of a school more than anything, rather than a house. It was apparently originally designed as well to mimic one that his mentor had designed in India. But big difference between the weather in Lexington, Kentucky. You may have noticed this past Monday, and India. So the one in India was designed with huge open spaces so that the airflow could move through and keep the whole house cool. Well, obviously here they couldn't do that, but that's why it's got giant windows. So they windowed in those, but so that you'd still have the light kind of streaming through from all angles, but that you would be protected from the rain, the snow, and all of that other fun stuff.
Yes, the weather in Lexington is, well, it changes, really, sometimes hour to hour, day to day.
Minute to minute. I have no idea what it could be like when I step outside.
True. So, yeah, so a building then has to take on the ability to adapt.
Yeah. And the architect, I mean, he actually, as I said, he was world famous. He's designed houses in India, France, apparently a lot in the Middle East. So his designs may not have caught on here, but they definitely did create incredible landmarks elsewhere.
Now, can people go into this building now?
You can't. It is now privately owned. And it's kind of very odd. It used to, when it was built, there was nothing else around it. So it was just this house on a hill. I mean, you couldn't miss it. Now there's actually a whole subdivision that's built around it.
But none of the buildings look like that.
Definitely not. The others are all, dare I say, apologies to anyone who lives in one, but they're McMansions. You know, they're that kind of, every house looks the same, which makes it very easy
to find this one. Yes.
You're not going to miss it. And so, yeah, it's privately owned now, so you really can't go in it. And I'm not sure if the owners actually live in it or if they bought it just because, you know, hey, it's a thing to own. It sold for $801,000 in 2021, which actually doesn't seem
overly. I would think it would fetch a higher price than that.
I think originally when it first went on the market back in the 2010s, there was a higher price, and it the price came down. So you can't go in it, but because it's on a hill, you can walk entirely around it from the sidewalk down below, which gives you a real interesting view of seeing how the house is put together, seeing all the different segments of it, and so on.
Well, and yet another example of, you know, a hidden gem, if you will.
Definitely.
In Lexington.
It's not something you're going to just happen to pass by because it really is kind of out of the way in a little neighborhood. But once you find it, it is oddly, I mean, as I say, I still couldn't see it as a house for me anyway, but I can definitely see the logic behind it, the style, there's some definite, I have a greater appreciation for it now, let's say.
Okay. Any other, well, you know, the repurposing of buildings.
Mm-hmm.
One that you can see quite frequently if you're on Loudoun Avenue would be Gray Line and
mm-hmm.
the Gray Line Station. And that building has seen some new life lately.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating example of repurposing, not just of the building, but I think it's really helped to kind of repurpose that whole area of town and has given it a big new lease of life because it used to be a bus station.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bus station for years. And actually, once you know that, that kind of makes sense when you see they still have the kind of garage doors.
Yes, the big giant doors. Of course, you have the bar there, North Bar.
Yeah. And those doors are great in the summer. Because you've kind of, you can get that air going right through. And then when I've been there in the winter and that's wide open, I'm not such a fan. Although it's also, they put little fire pits and so on outside as well. So yeah, Gray Line Station is now, I don't even know it's got some restaurants, it's got some bars. It was for a while a really cool inside market. I know now the farmers market is there. There's a few event spaces. I've been to a cocktail and horror stories evening event there. It's just, it's an interesting space, and I think they're really using a lot of it well.
And a hub for North Lexington, especially.
Exactly. And it's been great to see all the other little businesses that have then grown up in that area as well. I think it really has brought a lot of life back to that. One of the things that fascinated my husband probably more than me, but there will be many people who are interested. There's a huge water tank outside that apparently was once used for something agricultural water collection. I don't know. But now when they redesigned the building, they did it to try and be as environmentally friendly as possible and to be a part of the environment, to be practical and so on.
Green, perhaps. Right?
And so yeah. The roof is designed that it has a bunch of gutters and is at an angle and so on, so that all the rainwater will then run off into a series of pipes underground. The water is then treated under the building and through the water system, then is fed to use the toilets in there. So they're trying to cut down on, you know, piping in water from outside. They're reusing the rainwater. Then if you look carefully, the parking lots have this special surface so the water can sink in, be collected again in tanks underground, and then that water is reused for all of the watering of plants and so on. And they've said apparently it also helps to reduce water bills for the owners within the building. So all of that is just repurposing and reusing the rainwater through the design of the building, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and you've given this new building, or this old building, a mm-hmm. new purpose.
Yeah.
And really a gathering spot for a lot of folks, especially in the North Lexington neighborhood. If you've never been to Lexington, this is one of those places that you definitely want to visit when you come here.
Yeah, and as well as the bars and the hangouts, North Lime Donuts and so on, it's really become a big community space as well. I know there are a lot of different events down there.
Yeah, there was Dia de los Muertos on November 1st.
That's right.
They had that there. Poke my head in there.
I think they also have, you know, it's such a big space. They also have things like, you know, yoga, community yoga. I know they used to do a couple of school nights to help collect supplies and so on for local area families. It's kind of become a big, like you said, a hub of the community, especially in that side of town.
So we've pretty much been all around Lexington, and these are what I would consider the architectural gems and oddities, if you really mm-hmm. want to, but there are, if you go to the Transy neighborhood, you'll see a lot of, an example, quite a few examples of the old time architecture that really put Lexington on the map in the 1800s.
Yeah.
1700s and 1800s.
Yeah. Gratz Park is a beautiful example just because you can walk any of the little streets around there and around the park and you'll see some absolutely beautiful architecture. Again, that's the, I know the quirky stuff rather than, but, apparently, was it McMurtry is one name that I've come across a lot who designed a lot of that area. But, I mean, that's, yeah, you'll see your traditional, your sort of classical southern houses, the pillars. There's a lot of little turrets and things at the top of a lot of them. And along 3rd Street as well. I always think it must be nice to have a house with a little turret at the top. Or I try to imagine sitting there with a telescope or if you had a house with a little tower,
absolutely.
Have to do something with it.
Yes, you'd have to imagine yourself maybe from another time.
Exactly.
At the time that this was built and things of that nature. So back to the oddities then, since the book is just full of them. And again, the book is Secret Lexington, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure kind of describes a lot of the buildings in and around our fair town. We talked about the the Dixie Cup. We talked about the UFO out on Leestown Road at the Coca-Cola plant. We talked about the Miller House. Is there anything else that that strikes your fancy that people, if they haven't read your book, need to be aware of?
I think the big thing, as you said, we've talked about all around the outskirts of Lexington. Downtown is much more traditional, classical, and so you're definitely going to see some beautiful architecture there. I don't know if it would necessarily be weird or obscure, but I think definitely, again, talking about those landmarks that everyone knows is the big, big blue.
Oh,
the trash
yes.
can.
The trash can. The big blue trash can.
Exactly. Which.
It's, or the Rubbermaid building. We used to, because it looked like a Rubbermaid.
Oh, okay. So I can
trash
see that
can.
As well. See, everyone
yeah.
has a name for it, and they all know it by a certain thing.
Yeah.
But then when you ask them what the actual name of the building is, like,
is it the financial center? What do we call that building?
What is the official name of this building? I want to say Fifth Third, but it is the Lexington Financial Center.
Ah, I was close.
Which, Big Blue.
Big Blue building.
Big Blue makes more sense.
Certainly.
And again, that's that one that's your marker for downtown. Wherever you are, if you get lost and you can see that.
What's the story behind that?
So that was built it's the tallest building in the city, which is why it's such a good marker. It was built in 87, so it's actually much newer than a lot of our other, especially downtown, is much newer than most of the other ones. It is said, a lot of people will tell you that it has 31 stories. It actually, as far as I could tell, is 30. There's no 13th floor. And so a lot of people, you'll get in and you'll go into the elevator and see 31, but there's actually one missing.
And you can't press the button in the elevator
exactly.
for 13.
Sadly, you can't go into the building or you can't go very far in the building unless you're actually working there. Architects, lawyers, banks, and so on all have their offices there. So if you have an appointment with them, I'm sure they'll let you in. Which is a shame because I think it would be a great spot if they did open up kind of an observation floor for people, just because it would give incredible views.
Oh, yeah. Think about
that. Across Lexington.
Yeah.
So it's octagonal from the ground. Everyone focuses on the shape of the roof, which does make it look like a trash can or something with that kind of angle. But it's actually octagonal when you're down on the ground. But the whole thing is covered in that beautiful blue glass.
Yes.
And it is absolutely stunning. It reflects everything around it. Depending on the time of day, sunrise or sunset, you get those beautiful, just the reflections, and it glows. It literally glows across town. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Hasn't been up there for very, very long, but it has a long history of people maybe going up, rappelling down.
Yeah.
And a stuntman who unfortunately lost his life.
That's a story that my husband tells me of someone who did fall and have an accident. They have had occasional, either a stair climb if you feel for charity, if you feel inclined to climb that many flights of stairs. But it's for a good cause, so I suppose. Although then you've got to go all the way down again. So maybe not. Or the other challenge that they've had is people rappelling down the side as well, which part of me thinks, ooh, that sounds like fun. And then part of me thinks, but I'd get up there and then think, maybe it's just more fun to watch other people do it. But
just
I keep waiting.
Don't look down.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I keep waiting to see if there is going to be another one of those kind of fundraisers that make the most of it being the tallest building in Lexington.
Before that, it was, I believe, the Fifth Third Bank building
mm-hmm.
was the tallest for a long, long
yes.
time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then Big Brother came along.
Yep. This one took it over. And I don't think, I don't see anything else coming in anytime soon to try and take it over. I don't.
No. And, just, I don't say recently, but in the last 20 years, we had the Center Point block. And For a while, it was Center Pit and Center Pasture and all of that.
I actually very much liked it when it was Center Pasture.
It was
nice to have that green space.
And you had the horse fence around it.
Yeah,
you could just go frolic for a while. So.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's now the city center.
Mm-hmm.
And there's quite a few businesses in there. The Marriott, for one.
Yep.
And I guess the Jeff Ruby Steakhouse around there as well. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But again, if you're talking about any kind of cityscape for Lexington, what does the mind go to or the eye go to? And it's certainly the Big Blue Building.
Yeah. I mean, when you're flying in, when you're driving in, you just see that and you think, okay, yeah, now I know where I am or where I'm heading.
And another landmark that turns 50 next year is Rupp Arena. That was built in 1976.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the Wildcats have been playing there ever since. And that too, although it has undergone some substantial renovations here of late.
Yeah, definitely the convention center part of it or Heritage Hall and so on, which I admit I still get lost in the new design. I'd figured my way around the old one quite easily, but now I tend to get kind of lost going in there for anything.
So the big takeaway for the folks who have been listening to this podcast is people have taken chances over the years as far as ideas and just I want to make a statement with whatever I'm constructing today.
Yeah, and I think in those cases, I'm sure, when they were building the UFO plant, the UFO plant, see, I even call it that now, the Coca-Cola plant, people were looking at it and thinking, why? I'm sure when Bondurant was building his pharmacy, people were wondering, what is he thinking? Why can't he just build a regular-looking building? But they become part of what makes somewhere, they give it character. And, they're kind of little local landmarks that I'm sure a lot of people are very attached to. The Parkette and the loss of that shows it, So we like our quirks.
We do. It's what makes Lexington, as I said, what makes Lexington, Lexington. And if you want to know more about our fair town and you've never been here or maybe you just need a reminder about this great place where you're living, pick up the book Secret Lexington, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. And it was penned by my co-host, Fiona Young Brown. And as we mentioned, this is Lexington Stories, Lore, and More. We're going to be back next month, and we will surprise you with a topic that we will discuss offline. Thanks again for your time today, Fiona.
Thanks. Thank you.